Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years, a snowy episode. I hope everybody out there that was complaining in the Michigan area that we haven't had snow is happy now that we've had multiple snow days. The kids are getting days off of school, but whatever. I am, of course, Nick Baumgartner, Colton Pouncey on vacation this week. An original cast member, Chris Burke, is back to talk some off-season Lions. Chris, how are we doing?
Did Colton go somewhere?
I hope he went somewhere warm. I don't know if he did, though. I think he was just taking the week off. I think he was just unplug. Yeah. But that actually is a good point. I didn't think about that.
Get buried. Snow days are a grind, man. It's exciting for the kids. And so, the first one, we're on our second one now.
Right. We had one yesterday.
The first one was it's kind of exciting to tell them that they have a snow day, but then. Well, here's how, so the end of the day, they all go to bed, and I was like, I'm just going to lay on the couch and watch some basketball, and I poured myself a drink, and I didn't have the energy to finish the drink, so I ended up pouring it out and just went to bed. So that's how our first snow day went.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Mine was, our kids are still young enough to where they're in daycare, so it was daycare was off, and then we got the email last night at 8:30 that they were going to be back open today. And I was like, well, thank God, because I was going to have to call the authorities if there was one more day of two toddlers in the house, I guess. But it is what it is. We're moving on. I've got some big snowman outside as well.
Nice. But, there you go.
Speaking of big snowmen, the big topic today I think I wanted to touch on to start with, or at least tall men anyway. Dan Campbell not making the list at all, Chris, for the Coach of the Year award. I think that seemed to stir some folks up a little bit locally. Not making that list was Nick Sirianni, Eagles coach, which I really didn't understand that one. That was maybe more of the befuddled one to me. The Campbell one, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I guess I wasn't as surprised. I mean, they didn't make the playoffs. I saw some people were Doug Peterson'd. You know,
Sirianni,
I think he was on there, right?
On the list?
Why no, didn't think Sirianni no, there was a, the well, list? So, okay, this is interesting. Now, unless this
was
has
he
been
on
corrected.
The first list?
Yes, there was an original graphic sent out, and he was on it. And then the actual name list comes out, maybe an hour later, if that, maybe a half hour later, and he's not on it. And everyone's like, well, what the hell? All right. So, yeah, he didn't make it. So, I tweeted yesterday, get the sideline cam ready, because I'm sure he's got a double bird for somebody or something ready for this next week. But in any event, Campbell doesn't make the list. Some Lions folks a little upset. I don't know. Maybe they have a right to be. I don't know. Maybe they don't. What are your thoughts on that? It's an interesting situation here in Detroit because of everything that they've gone through. But yeah.
Well, now I'm back because the initial list had five or six names on it, right? And now it's...
Well, they changed something. Somebody screwed something up.
Now it's Daboll, Peterson, and Shanahan, I think, are the three, right?
So, and then it's down to the three. Yeah, that sounds right.
Anyway.
Fitting guys.
It was more egregious to me when there were six or seven names and he wasn't one of those. Yeah. So the initial, the three that are the actual finalists here, I don't know that you... I mean, I think Campbell himself said he thought Daboll should be...
Yeah, Coach of the Year.
The Coach of the Year. And I don't think you could argue with Peterson or Shanahan, so...
Oh, God, no.
If the Lions had gotten into the playoffs, I think, too, that probably would have changed things a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, it doesn't feel like a huge snub to not be one of those three. I think, like I said, if it had been five, six, seven, and you were talking about some of the other names that were initially mentioned, it felt worse. But it's hard to be Coach of the Year and not make the playoffs, even acknowledging what Campbell did and what the Lions accomplished this year.
Because you have to, at the same time, Peterson did the same thing and made the playoffs.
Right.
And he had one worse pick, actually. Yeah. He had the worst pick, so he technically had the worst, you know, situation. So, I mean, and he won a playoff game. So, I mean, in that sense, fair enough. But I do think, to the point there, if Campbell, if they win and get in, if they don't, you know, maybe lose to Carolina or whatever, whatever situation happens the way it happens, then certainly he's at least probably, I think that he would be maybe in this three. You know, I think that'd be fair at some point. Probably. And I think that brings up the greater point here. And I think we touched a little bit with you the last time you were on. But I mean, you know, now that we're a couple, maybe a month here removed from year two of Dan Campbell, you were there every day for year one. Kind of your sort of assessment on maybe I would ask you first, maybe where you've seen him grow and maybe where you still have questions about, you know, where things are going.
I mean, I think kind of two of the big landmarks that obviously jump out are the Anthony Lynn decision last year to remove him as coordinator. And then to some extent, the Aubrey Pleasant decision this year, which I don't know was as clear cut on the surface. And I don't know that the, like last year it was, all right, well, we're going to bring in, Ben Johnson's going to help out with the play calling. Campbell's going to take over in game. I don't know that the stuff that happened with the DBs from there was quite as obvious on the surface,
I'm still not totally sure what happened there, honestly.
But I think, you know, those are two big moments because I think we know how sort of loyal Dan Campbell is and how much time and energy he puts into maintaining his, like, personal and professional relationships. And so you can just assume what goes into his decisions to add a guy to his coaching staff. And so I think that it was significant to see him, you know, sort of make those decisions and say, all right, this isn't working. What else can we do? Because I think that that tells you he's going to put the team results above the stuff that might be uncomfortable for him. So those are big. I mean, I think the other one that I saw people talk about, like, in the moment, but kind of got lost a little bit. There was a play in the Packers game, like, late. The Packers jumped offside, I think, on purpose. And I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about. It was, like, a second and one with, like, 3 minutes left.
I feel like,
and the Packers jumped offside on purpose.
Yeah.
And Campbell declined it so they could get the extra, like, they could run the first down play.
Right.
And eat up a Packers timeout instead of taking the automatic first down and letting Green Bay call its three timeouts and get the ball back. So anyway, it's not like that big a play in the grand scheme of things, but there were little moments like that where I was like, oh, he should definitely, like, it'd be smarter to decline this penalty and run the play. And then he declined the penalty and run the play. And you're like, oh, all right, well, maybe the game management stuff's coming along a little bit here too.
Yeah, maybe he's paying attention.
And so I think that was the biggest thing. Like, we knew the culture was way better, and we knew the roster was going to gradually get better, but that was the one that you looked at and said, all right, well, if he's always going to be terrible in these game management spots, like these tight spots, that's going to be hard to overcome when it gets to, you know, those big games. And I think he's improved there. So that, as much as anything, to me is encouraging for next year, that maybe he's got a feel now for sort of how to react in the moment as a head coach. And I think you take that into next season too.
Yeah. There's, like, so much about Colton. And I talked about this at one point during the Aaron Glenn up and down stretch before he got the ship righted, but it was like, and the same holds for him, where I kind of settled on, like, you can't coach the way you played. You can't coach a game or respond to situations and games the way you would have if you played, you know, because, you know, sometimes if you played, you know, your default on a third and two or a fourth and one is going to be, we can go get this. This, all this bullshit can go away right now. All the thinking we're doing over here, we'll just snap the ball, get behind me, we'll go get the thing done. And, like, that's not how you coach a kid. You can't do that. And there was way too much of that going on with Campbell. And I think that, to your point, this year, I think across the board, for the most part, he was better this year. And I think Aaron Glenn actually sort of overcame some of that as he went on too. But for me, I think more than anything, the things that get revealed about him are interesting. Like, you know, Colton did a rewatch, I think, the other day on Hard Knocks and some of the stuff Campbell said. And he tweeted out the clip that Campbell, you know, he's talking to the team in that episode about after the first practice with pads, I think it was, where they're hitting, and he's like, some of you guys are looking at me sideways and like, what are we doing right now?
Right.
Yeah. And like, you could sense in that moment, like, I mean, for us, like, we were around Campbell all the time. I think we saw a lot of who he was before the people did. But if you were paying attention, like, you could see in that spot, I mean, he's telling those guys, like, I've got a plan for everything. I'm thinking about all I do is think about every little detail about the little things and every little thing that we have and this, that, and the other. And then you see how he responds to, like, the heat. You see how he responds when it doesn't go the way it goes. And he said at the end of the year, we were a great example of just sort of staying the course. To me, it's like he really found his, like, coaching legs, whatever, this year, his, yeah, like, compass, if you want to call it that. Like, he had a plan that he told himself, I'm trusting it all the way. I'm not deviating from it. I put the work in. I'm not going to second guess myself. And I think that's what we saw this year. And as much as, you know, to the point about growing with your decisions, which he certainly has, I think just like he's found his legs as a leader, you know what I mean? Like, and being a confident person on your own right is like 85% of the whole thing. And I think that he probably crossed a pretty big bridge there this year, I'd say.
Well, we've talked about this a bunch too, is that he almost wants you to think, like, the way he projects it, he almost wants you to think, like,
that he's stupid.
He doesn't know what he's doing, right? Like, but I do think that there is growth. And I think I've told this story on the podcast before too, but like his introductory press conference was the, you know, biting the kneecaps and whatever. Yeah. We were all on Zoom. I asked him a question in it about, because, like, he took over the interim tag in Miami, mm-hmm, and then, like, within a week, there was a whole bunch of crap about how he, like, had the team run an Oklahoma drill or something like that. Like, people went nuts. Like, this is ridiculous. And so I asked him, like, I prefaced the question by bringing that up and then asked him, like, how he thinks he's grown, mm-hmm, as a coach. And he definitely was insulted that I brought up the Oklahoma drill.
Really,
so I was like, oh, great. Great first impression we made here that he, like, he already hates me. But so that was, like, that was the first thing I wanted to know about him as a head coach, mm-hmm, was, like, how are you different now than you were in Miami? Because it's obviously when you went from Miami, and then I think he would probably tell you that stretch with Sean Payton, at least from a coaching standpoint, is probably as important as anything else that he's done.
It was
in
a formative
career.
Stretch of his career.
Like, that's it. That's where he was, you know,
that's where all this is coming from.
And he saw how Peyton handled everything and all the decisions he made. And so I don't think there's any question he was a different coach at the start of this than he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And I think we've obviously seen the growth over the last 2 years here too. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I mentioned last time I was on, like, I think this is the challenging part for him and Holmes. Like, now that you've got everyone to buy in, mm-hmm, and everything looks rosy, like, okay,
what now?
Well, how do you get from 9-8 to 12-5? Like, that's a tough jump too.
Yes.
So how do we handle success? How do you handle success in the offseason where it's not everyone's going home thinking, we suck, this is horrible, I got to work to get ready for next year.
Yeah,
it's like, we were pretty good this year. We're going to win the division next year.
There are a lot of teams that have that feeling every year, by the way, at the end of the year. It's about staying good. Like, Colton and I had the big, long discussion last week, and we'll talk in the second half of the show about the draft. But, like, that's why we talk so much about the draft, and that's why we talk so much about futures, even at positions that you maybe don't think that futures need to be talked about, because there's a strategy of staying good, staying youngish, while not getting too young or too old and all that. And I think that's, you're right. I think that the test for Holmes is to continue sort of what he's done, but it's also for Campbell is to sort of adjust as he goes, because it's not going to be the same every year. And they've talked about that, like, everybody. And I thought this year they actually had the best way of approaching that. And I think this was the ultimate sort of whatever for Campbell's second season. I'm interested to see what the third will be, but you know, they talked about everybody graduates in year two. Last year, everybody was a kindergartner. Now we're graduating. Everybody that stays here for this year gets a pass to the second season, has to be that much better, whatever it is. And that now has to, the graduation now has to go from, we're not talking about you guys anymore as, like, exciting young prospects. We're talking about you guys as good football players on a playoff team. Like, that is the graduation for everybody on the team that played last year. And if you can't handle that, then you can't be here anymore. And that is now, I think, the conversation that they have to sort of live in, the air or whatever. And it will be interesting to see how he handles that, because the greatest appeal of Campbell has been that everybody loves to play for him. That there's not a single guy in that locker room that doesn't like Dan Campbell. We have not found one yet. If there is one, I don't know. I mean, there's not, maybe Jamie Collins didn't love him, but Jamie Collins lasted a week. Okay. So like beyond that, when it gets tougher and you got to ask for a little bit more, when guys maybe don't want to give it and it really needs to come, that's when it starts, you know, that, but that's also when the work you've done prior pays off. So I'm curious to see this next step for him too.
Well, and that's why it was so important, especially like right now, probably more so this year than last year. And we don't know what's going to happen. Like Aaron Glenn is still a possibility to go get a job somewhere. He's still a name for the head coaching jobs. But I think that's why it was so important to keep Ben Johnson around.
Yeah, and that was the second part here. Yes, for sure.
You know, have some stability with the other guys on staff as much as you could. Like, and they talked about even at the start of the tenure, like keeping Fraley you know, just having like, you can't have a foundation on your roster without having this, the matching foundation on the coaching staff. And so Fraley and Johnson and Kelvin Shepard for sure. And like they had, Sean Dion Hamilton was on that staff. Sounds like that was pretty successful this year. Like all these guys that, you know, the players also respect them too. You can't have just a head coach everyone likes and then a bunch of idiots behind him and expect to be successful. So, I do think it is remarkable, and we've talked about this a lot, and I'm sure you've, Colt, have talked about it a lot. Like, it was one thing to say, well, we got to change the culture. Like, that, you know, every time there's
a coaching hire,
like, that's like one of the first things. We got, unless you're like right on the cusp, you're getting hired to push a team over the top. It's like, we got to change the culture. To see them in 2 years do what they've done now. And I think you're right. It's no longer like we need to bring in guys to help us lay that foundation. It's who's going to come in here and accept that this is what we've got. Like it's built.
This is what we have.
It's here. You can see what's here. You can see what the coaches are going to be like. You can ask the players who are here what it's going to be like on a day-to-day basis. There are no surprises that you're going to get in year three.
Yeah.
Does everyone fit that? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw people, like, today it's all over my Twitter timeline, people talking about trading for Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Does that work with this team? I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, talent-wise, sure.
Just because it's possible, awesome, and it is possible. Like, that's a...
It works, but that I don't think it's always... It's not just a, well, we need a corner, let's go get the best corner. That's not the conversation, especially with this group. It's going to be talent and the personality, and maybe personality might be more important than the talent in some cases. So
it's at least even. It's at least even.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I do think that they... I don't know. I mean, they clearly are in a good spot right now. And so if you have a good offseason here too, I mean, you should feel good going into next year. There's really not a whole lot that should happen this offseason that should take you back a step or two. So,
no, I wouldn't think so. Before we move into total offseason talk, a couple more. Ben Johnson also up for the, I believe, assistant coach of the year, which I didn't know was a thing. Yep. but that's cool that that's a thing. I didn't know that was a thing. And then I think Aiden Hutchinson is a finalist for the Defensive Rookie of the Year. I don't believe Aiden's going to get that. Sauce Gardner's certainly going to get that award. And I don't think anybody should take that as a – we've talked about this as a slight. He's a generational prospect, Sauce is. And he's maybe – Sauce Gardner might be the best corner or one of the best three or four in football right now, regardless of age. That's what he is. And Aiden is not there as an edge. So I think that that's fine to compare. But the Ben Johnson situation, Chris, obviously he stays. But the one thing that Colton and I touched on a little bit, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this too a little bit, and this is maybe touches back on what we just talked about, but I didn't think they'd be in as big a trouble if they lost Ben Johnson as opposed to last year if they'd lost Aaron Glenn. I thought Campbell seemed to be much more okay with the, like, I mean, he was certainly happy with him, and he wouldn't have, and he was happy that he's back. Obviously, they gave him a big raise, and he would have preferred him back. But like, I think he was comfortable with the idea of like, if I have to go find another guy, or if I have to take more of a role myself, I can do that, and I'm ready to do that, which is super interesting to me. And I don't know your thoughts on, I guess, Ben. What do you expect from him going forward? How much changes? How much doesn't change with the offense? And then, do you agree with that? My point there on, like, do you think they would have been okay? Because I mean, that's going to be a situation soon. If they have another good year offensively, he's out of here.
Sure,
they're not going to be able to take him, keep him forever.
Well, I mean, I think it sort of goes back to my point I just made a few minutes ago, where like at the end of year one, I feel like Campbell was like, we can't afford to lose someone right now.
No.
So if Aaron Glenn had gone,
it would have been really bad.
And now knowing like that, I don't know that he, like, Campbell and Aubrey Pleasant were butting heads last year, but Aubrey Pleasant probably would have been the guy all of us assumed would get bumped up to D coordinator.
That was the guess Glenn left at the time.
And I don't know if that was the slam dunk we thought it was. So
it doesn't
maybe
seem like
Campbell
it,
was sitting there thinking, like, I don't know where we're going to go.
He seemed lost and scared.
Yeah, well, and I think, to be fair, he had already replaced his offensive coordinator at that point. And so
yes.
If you lose your defensive coordinator, now you're back to like, all right, this is going to be harder to lay the groundwork here.
That wasn't good.
And so I think at this point they do probably feel in a better spot. And whether that comes from whether that hire would have come internally or not, I mean, I think that they would have been comfortable with the guys that they had back, with Deuce still being here, with Fraley, with like Randall L and Tanner Engstrand and JT Barrett still on the staff, I think
so,
like all these guys that are like pretty interesting football minds. Like, I think he would have felt better about that. So I agree. Like, he obviously didn't want to lose Ben Johnson. There's a reason everyone wants Ben Johnson or wanted Ben Johnson. But I agree that it felt like last year when Glenn was like, you could just sort of see the panic in his eyes, like the thought of like, well, what do I do if Glenn leaves? Like, I don't think there was a...
I don't have an answer.
I don't think he was sitting there like, all right, well, we'll just go to this. I think it was going to be a little bit of a process.
Yeah, I don't think he had an answer. I have no idea.
So I think this year he's just in better shape with it. So, yeah, I mean, I would agree with you there. As for like the award itself, I mean, he's up with DeMeco Ryans.
Oh, so it's offense and defense? Okay.
And then the Eagles offensive coordinator. Shane Steckman.
Shane, yeah. Well, hey.
So it's a pretty good group. It's a pretty
good group. I don't
know
if he's winning that.
I think there's absolutely an argument for Ben Johnson to win.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know if he's winning it, but there's absolutely an argument for that, right? Because, and I think that this is, we got a lot of interesting remarks from the folks about our Anthony Richardson conversation last week. Colton got a lot, obviously. Dane got a lot.
Dane's still getting them, I think. I think he's still swimming in them.
But I mean, the great point here is that, you know, people fell into their feelings about Jared Goff. We've talked about this, and that's great. I'm happy that Jared Goff has been accepted by Lions fans. He's earned that, deserves it. Colton and I talked about this last week, Chris. I think that a lot of people have a little guilt about how they've treated Jared Goff. You know, a lot of people hadn't quite made their apology about how they've said things. Colton and I had our mea culpa midseason. Hey, look, we were hard on him. The guy was terrific. But Jared Goff had the year Jared Goff had because he was put in situations that he wasn't being put in a year ago at this time. And Anthony Lynn went to San Francisco and is coordinating the best offense in football. So, I mean, like, it's a lot Ben Johnson. I think that that's kind of the point at the end of the day. I think everybody saw that. And I think that's probably the greatest point here, is that they were down and out. If you go all the way back, and, you know, Ben Johnson's sort of award here in this sense, or candidacy, would almost be season and a half, because you'd have to go all the way back to middle of last year and the work they did to repair the damage that really was done in L.A. with McVay, because Sean McVay and his staff broke Jared Goff mentally. They broke him. They lost him. And you cannot do that with quarterbacks. Sorry, you just can't. That's not a sign of great coaching. That is a sign of poor coaching, in my opinion, and that it's on... That's on Sean McVay. That's not on Jared Goff. He was 24 years old, whatever it was at this time. We now have, you know, whatever, the, you know, hindsight being what it was. You know, mentally, they broke him, and he was not ready for that type of coaching coming out of it. And the job they've done to repair that and get everything out of him a year and a half, whatever, removed from where he was, man, like, that's why he was a serious candidate. And that's why I think that he's the real deal and why they're happy to have him back.
Yeah, Ben Johnson. I mean, and not to spin too far into the Anthony Richardson conversation.
Well,
get
sure.
You in trouble again here, but like
you can do that because we're going to do it again. Everybody.
I just mean, like, as we talk about today, progress, yeah. And sort of what's changed, I do think it is pretty incredible that Jared Goff has like forced his way into being respected by Detroit Lions fans.
Yeah, they have that no choice.
That was an impossible situation for
really
him. Like
was.
You said, the Rams were like, we hate you. Please
yeah,
get out of here.
You're the
and
worst.
And he came here to take over for arguably the greatest quarterback in franchise history. Not the most successful, but the greatest quarterback in franchise history on a garbage team with a coaching staff front office change. It was just set
it's
up
the worst.
For like, and we talked about 5-6 games into that first season. Like, this is awful. He's got to go. He's terrible.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
I think you got to get, like, he deserves an incredible, like, I think you could have, I guess he played too much last year and put up too many numbers last year.
Yes,
but
I know everyone.
I think he could have been a comeback player of the year candidate this year.
He is the comeback player of the year.
As we talk about snubs, and I'm looking at that list as Barkley, McCaffrey, and Geno Smith, so I don't
fair
really
enough.
Take issue with any of those names
no,
either.
Fair
but
enough. Geno,
I think you could have made a case. And I think it was probably just because he played too much and probably played too well on the stretch last year. But
yeah.
I think he was a comeback player of the year candidate.
That...
he was great for a lot of this year.
It's a great point. Because Geno Smith, in some ways, people made the argument, didn't go anywhere. There was nowhere for him to come back from. He just got ignored. So, like, there, what's the comeback?
Right.
Saquon, you know, he got the hurt injury, fair enough, you know, all that. Injuries coming off of, but the Goff, yeah, that's what he was more than anything else. Because we're talking about comeback. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about. A guy who went from year two, I'm playing in the Super Bowl. The next offseason, they give me a ridiculous contract that no one was ready for. That they were just over everything they were doing at the time was like to the extreme because they didn't really know what they were doing. I mean, to be fair, if we can look back at it now, he's on a wild ride. It doesn't go the way McVay, who is a great coach, of course, doesn't go the way he wants it to go. He throws a huge fit, shatters this guy's confidence. That's the story of Jared Goff. Now he's playing like a Pro Bowler. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably well said and probably the greatest point. And the point that we talk about all the time around here is not giving up on players, and he's the great example, but it's also like the reason why, you know, he's the reason why he makes the comeback, but I mean, he's not in that situation if the coaching isn't what it is here. I mean, let's be clear. There are limitations to his game. He has strengths, obviously, that some people, including myself, have underwhelmed and underlooked, but there are still limitations to his game. This is not a guy that you're hitching your wagon to for 15 years, whatever. That's just not happening here. So, any thoughts on the Aiden's year here before we move on to the offseason? I mean, it was, I would say Aiden had about the year I thought he would have, probably a few more sacks than I thought he would have. But honestly, I think this is about what I thought he would do. I mean, this is not crazy to me that this happened. I don't know what you're. I know we were pretty high on him, obviously, last year, so it's not a surprise. But your thoughts on
Aiden? I wasn't expecting three picks. I wasn't expecting the
interception. Yeah, that's fair. The picks were high. Picks and sacks were higher than I thought.
And I also, I know you've made this point too. The big surprise for me is that just how much he played.
Yeah,
like
for
a young guy to play, what did he end up with? I mean,
almost
he was over 1,000.
I think he was over 1,000 by the end. Yeah,
That's a ton of snaps for really anyone in this league, but for a rookie especially, because a lot of times those edge guys, teams do not want them on the field on first and second down at all. And so for him to be out there, I mean, some of it was just the reality of the roster, like who else are you going to play there? But for him to be out there and then I think get better as the season went along too.
Exactly.
Says a lot about sort of the work, again, the coaching staff, but also him as a prospect and sort of all the things they liked about him. So, I'm not surprised by how he performed. I'm a little surprised that he was able to take on that much of a workload for the entire season. I think that's another deserving candidate for Rookie of the Year. Like you said, I be very surprised if he wins it because of what Sauce Gardner did, but
certainly deserving.
Certainly, and of that Edge group too. I mean, I think you would have to say he had the best season of the Edge group.
He did.
So that's what you want, right? I mean, that's all you can ask for from the guy.
He just inches up. He's a hard. He was a hard guy to scout, and I understood why there was a lot of people that didn't quite get their get the grasp on him, and a lot of smart people, people that understand football, because you have to watch. You had to watch him for his whole career. I think you had to watch the full package of him to see right. how he is as a player. And you have to take that into account of like kids get older, they grow up, and you know what I mean? Like their ability to, if he's a fast processor at 17 and he's a faster processor at 20, imagine what he is at 22. And like, that's what we've seen from Aiden Hutchinson. He is anyone who's watched the, this always reminds me of this. Did you watch the Tony Hawk documentary that HBO did? I think it was HBO.
I have not, but I saw you tweeting about it, so it's on my list of things.
It's really, really good.
Things to watch.
I don't know what channel that's on or what one of these damn things it's on, but if you can find it, find it. But anyway, there's a spot in there about one of his like friends or like another pro skater is talking about watching Tony Hawk, and they're like, you can watch him like learn a trick and teach himself physically. Mentally and physically, like to inch up and just get better and better and better until he lands it. That's what he does. He just does it and doesn't falls and just keeps going and going and going and going until he lands his trick. And like, that's how Aiden Hutchinson, I feel like, plays football. It's just like, he just keeps going. And if one thing doesn't work, okay, well, the next time it's not going to happen again. And then if that doesn't work quite right, I'm going to twist it again until it works. That's just what he does. And after 3 years, whatever it was, 4 years at Michigan, you saw him go from a skinny whatever that didn't look strong enough to an All-American. And by the end of his first year in the NFL, you saw a kid that looked like physically he was ready for it, but maybe we'll see. And then by the end of the year, yeah, he was the best edge of his class and one of the best edges probably in the league. And I think that's where it's going for him. And that's just the kind of player he is. And you had to have and it's a testament to the Lions scouting department that they trusted their gut. Because he was the right fit, and I like Kayvon and I like Trayvon Walker, but Aiden Hutchinson was the right fit for the Lions in every way. And I think it was a testament to all those guys because he was a long scout. Walker, too, and Kayvon to a degree. All those guys were hard. It was a hard thing to sort, that edge group, but all of them had good years. But I would say that Aiden probably did have the best. Yeah, that's probably a fair statement at the end. Anything else? Okay, we'll take a break here, and then we'll come right back.
Break there, yeah.
We'll take a break, and we'll come right back, talk a little bit about the offseason, maybe some draft. All right, everybody, we're back. One of these years, Nick Baumgartner here with Chris Burke. A little offseason talk here, Chris. Draft is coming up, whether people are ready for it or not. It's around the bend. Got the Senior Bowl next week. I will be there. Combine in, about a month. Or so, somewhere in there. Where are you at here on the draft as things start, my man? I mean, we've seen Dane's mock. We talked about all this last week. Some other folks have made their, some of the other, Daniel Jeremiah, I think, had Devin Witherspoon, I think, to the Lions at 6. I think Mel Kiper's got Tyree Wilson, I think, somewhere in there.
Yep.
I'm not sure what McShay did. A lot of corner talk, a lot of where are you landing on? What are some of your theories that are percolating here in your head?
Well, we've talked about this. It's hard because they are in that spot where it's like right below. Like you need something.
They're in the drop zone.
Yeah, you need to go up. You need something crazy to happen above you. Or you need to think about going back. They're right in that area where if it's three quarterbacks and the top two defensive guys, then it's like. All right. Well,
shit.
What do you do here? Yeah. And I said, we got one of the questions we got on Twitter this week was, would you consider a tackle or a guard in the first round?
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would at 6 just because I don't know that the class is that good, but maybe if you stack it up against some of the other guys there, at this moment, and that's not to say, I don't think Tyree Wilson's a bad player. I don't think taking one of those cornerbacks would be a bad decision. Murphy, Brian Brissy, there's a lot of names there.
So
I kind of I kind of have to talk myself into all of them right now at six. So there's 3 months to go. I'm sure I'll get there on a couple of them, but like that's where I'm at right now. And like, there's not a guy that I'm like, that's the one if they stay put.
I think what I'm landing on is like at six is the best defensive player available.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like to me. And I say defensive, but because I hesitate to say like best player available, but it might be best player available. We'll see. Okay. We'll see how the combine shakes out. We'll see what these numbers and testing, because you brought up the point about the linemen.
I don't think so either.
Like Skoronski is going to be there toward the bottom of the top 10. He's not going to do anything at the combine I think he's at the Senior Bowl or one of these things. He's not going to do anything. I don't think that's going to turn that into anything that we don't already know about him. Paris Johnson, the Ohio State kid, is the one that I wonder about because he is really young. I think he was either a redshirt sophomore coming out this year or a fourth year guy, whatever. So he's really young either way. He's played tackle and guard and he's friggin' really athletic. He is really athletic and he's long. And I think that if he measures and tests and does all the things that he maybe can, then he would be maybe a guy that people might look at a little different, I guess, but I don't know again, because like you say, you bring up all the other stuff on tape, like there's a lot of hiccups in there and a lot of gaps.
Yeah.
But if you're Detroit, this is my second part. The other guy in that conversation is Jones, the kid from Georgia, Broderick Jones, who I also like a lot. And I think could be a guard too, if you needed him to be. And I think could do the things all these guys could, frankly, that we're talking about. For the Lions' current situation, and then they could all be tackles down the road. That's the thing that we've talked about so many times before. But yeah, no, I don't think I would take any of them at six, but I don't know how I can get down. I don't know how I can get down to like 12 either. And that's kind of what I would want to do. I would want to get down to like 10, 11, 12, and then I would think about that. And then it would open up a lot. Because if you could add another pick, and now you're talking about two premium defensive players, you're going to get a good corner in this first round if you want, no matter what. And yeah, and then you could get a little selfish and get a little crazy. That's not crazy or out of the realm of possibility, I don't think. If the player is right and if the board is right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to take a little, like I said, it's going to take a little getting there. Because like we've had this conversation, you and I too. If I were stacking them up right now, and I don't have like my personal top 100 list or anything at the moment, Brian Branch might be the next best defensive player on that list. And so
after the first two.
And so that, like, you got to take a safety, like a nickel guy. Like, what are you going to do at six? So, yeah, I mean, it's tough. So, but I don't think it's kind of frustrating for them if they miss out on those top two. But I don't think it's bad to be looking at a board where you say, all right, well, these 8 to 10 guys all look pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have another pick coming at 18 where you probably can get a second one in that bucket. So I think that's encouraging for them. It's just
that's a great point. Actually,
it's going to be interesting how it sorts out, and especially like as they figure out what positions they need to jump on and what positions they don't. Like I was looking even that Senior Bowl roster, because Sean Dion Hamilton, I think, is the cornerbacks coach for the American team.
Yes,
he's down. So there. He's going to be up. Close. I mean, the safeties down there are more intriguing. He's going to be at the corners, but like the safeties on that American team, it's like the Georgia kid, Chris Smith, is there. Jamie Robinson, who from Florida State, who's like one of those like do everything type guy. Like there's some players you can find as you get into this thing that like it's hard to find that first pick for them, but I don't think it's that hard to build a class that you're like, that they're a lot better right now than they were 100%. Before the draft. So that's good.
This is a good draft, and it's a weirdish. Maybe it's not weirdish, but like it's a little different in a way that like it's really deep, I think. There's not a lot of like oh my God at the top. There is, but because you have two generational defensive prospects in Carter Will Anderson. But the core, and you have what we would say 3.5 quarterbacks, I guess, that are legitimate, you know, first round draft pick quarterbacks, we would say. I think that that's fair. I think that Bryce Young, Stroud,
I won't.
I think those are top 10 picks. I think those are top 10 picks. I think Levis, it's not going to shock me if he's a top 10 pick. I think he's probably a top 20 pick. And I think Anthony Richardson's a first round pick. So you got four in there. And obviously we know what that does to the top half of the draft. And I think that there's this, and Dane has written about this a little bit too, that like after five, the draft changes because you're no longer talking about the generational talents in Will Anderson and Jalen Carter. And you're not talking about starting quarterback unless you're talking about Richardson. You're talking about good players though. And I think that's been a little bit of a misconception I've heard from people, like everybody after those guys is a bum. Like, so it should just like, and it's like, well, no, not everybody after those guys is a bum. You're going to get good players, but everybody after Anderson and Carter comes with more like questions. And that is the, and you're now, and you're at the top of that list. You're going first. And I think that's where the anxiety comes in, right? Because it almost feels like you're picking one of a new, of like a new
right.
field.
Yeah, right.
It feels
exactly.
like, it feels like whatever happens in the top five is going to happen. And it's going to be Jalen Carter, Will Anderson, and three quarterbacks. That's how it's going to go. I don't know. We'll see if somebody else sneaks up in there, I guess, right? But like, that's the conventional thought. So if you're picking six, you're like number one of the next group. And you're like, well, shit, now we got to make a decision on who the best of the rest is. Because if you're like, well, like Dane has given them Gonzalez a couple times, right? Christian Gonzalez, the corner from Oregon. Yeah. And I have nothing wrong with that. Like, and that's Dane's number one corner on his board. And the Lions need a corner. So it makes sense. But then you really start to split the hairs on it. And you're like, well, I mean, I don't know if Christian Gonzalez plays football the way that Aaron Glenn likes corners to play football. And I think he would prefer Joey Porter maybe, but I don't know if Joey Porter's the guy that you take at six. And then it starts to get, right, it gets a little more complicated. So it's an interesting spot to be in here, I guess we'll say. Maybe not ideal.
Yeah, that's why I say you almost need, like, you're, I don't think it's, people who get mad that Anthony Richardson's name keep coming up, Lions fans should want Anthony Richardson. Either you want him to stay right where he is so the Lions have a shot at him, or you want his stock to just go, like, you want him to Zach Wilson this thing over the next 3 months so that
you want everyone to think you're taking him at six.
Right. Or you can trade out. Same thing for, the, like, Paris Johnson. Like, you want him to have, because you want the Cardinals to be sitting there like, maybe we need him more than Will Anderson. And then Will Anderson falls in your lap at six. So you're rooting for this group of five to get expanded out to a group of seven or eight here somehow. And and then it doesn't feel quite as stuck. So I don't know. But again, I do think that they're in a good spot to get, because you look at the names that you think at this moment are going to be there at 18.
It's a lot of guys. It's
and
really
like
good.
49, that's pretty good. So
positive. That brings up another thought that I have before we go. I want to talk a little bit about free agency before we get out of here. Dane got a lot of flack about trading up for Richardson last week. And we talked about why you would have to do that possibly and all that. And why that I thought was a good simulation. I also think the other part of that is I the Lions have proven that they're not. If they like a guy, they're going to move up with that second pick. They did it last year to go get Jameson. So if they like one of those corners or a tackle or whatever it is more than another, and they're at 18 and they're worried about somebody at 13, 14, 15, like they're going to go up and get the guy. And I think that that's the other thing to remember is that they will have, I think, more freedom than you probably think they do just on the surface at six, because they don't have these like, oh my God, needs. Corner is certainly a need, and we'll get to that in a second. But they, other than that, like, they don't have a lot of that, like, oh, they have to do this. So, like, there's a lot they can do still. And I think that that's the other thing to remember. Free agency here, though, and that's where I think the corner conversation can maybe expand. What are your thoughts on the whole free agency picture with them? They're going to have a little bit of money to spend. I think they're going to have, I don't know how much exactly, but I think it's probably going to be enough to go get a real Pro Bowl level defender and pay him, and, you know, maybe a veteran who can play, maybe Chauncey. Maybe I'll just come out and say it, right? Like, maybe you get CJ Gardner Johnson, somebody like that. But like, I think you're going to have enough money to do something like that. I mean, what are your thoughts on maybe how they would use it, what they would do? Could you see him taking a splash on someone like that, or maybe trying to spread it around? I go back and forth on it, but like, what are your thoughts on some of that?
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth on it too, because it's, we don't really have evidence from Brad Holmes that he's going to go spend $1 billion.
We don't.
I think some of, again, that's like the Bob Quinn burned the bank on his way out.
Oh my God.
Like,
yeah.
So they didn't have an opportunity to spend money. Like they picked up Goff. They didn't, that was 30 million of the cap and they had all the dead money. And so
Bob Quinn.
We don't really know what he's going to do when he's in this spot. Like it wouldn't surprise me certainly to say we've already drafted 15 starters. Let's go sign.
Yeah.
Let's get the, who's the one guy
that
pushes us over the top?
Yeah, right.
Who's the one guy? And like corner certainly makes sense. So I'm trying to look at the cornerback class. Like safety is always the one I come back to because I think that's the one, like that's the position to me other than maybe like edge rusher where if you're going to spend.
That's where you pay.
Like go get, someone. Like go get Jesse Bates. Go get Adrian Amos. Like, go get some, maybe not Adrian Amos.
Yeah, and then
year,
leave
go
him
get
there
someone.
For 8 years.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that I think certainly in the secondary, there's an opportunity to do that this offseason. It's going to be interesting as they get a year, two, three, because we're already on what, like the Okuda 5-year option.
Yeah,
I know someone asked us about that, but. As they get into this and you're saying, all right, all these young guys are part of the foundation. Well, when those contracts come up all at the same time, you got to make sure that you can keep those guys. So I think that there's some of the decisions this offseason also have to look at 2025 and say, well, what are we going to have to pay Hutchinson and Rodriguez and Houston and like Jameson on this next set of contracts? Sewell's going to need a ton of money
to set the market for Sewell.
Like it's not going to be the same situation as before there was the rookie slotting and the Lions had the Stafford Sue it was the three contracts and then they didn't have any other money. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be to that, but at some point you're going to have to pay all those guys. So I think that's part of the conversations they're having now about free agency is how much can we spend now and how much can we spend on a contract that goes 5-6 years? Because at some point we're going to have to give Sewell $20 million a year.
Right.
And
For
Hutchinson
a long time.
Is going to have to be a top 10 guy. So it's interesting. It's an interesting spot they're in financially.
I do think that they're in a position to go get a veteran who's got 3 good years left and maybe give them 4 years, something like that. You know what I mean? But beyond that, and I think that, and I like when you brought up the point, I don't know if Holmes would do it or wouldn't. Like, they considered Allen Robinson last year, and he got a lot of money, right? I think you muted yourself there instead of unmuting yourself, but they considered it. They considered and he got a ton, and they pulled out when it got ridiculous, but like, they stayed in it for longer than I think either of us thought they were going to stay in it, right? So, they were willing to spend some money on a guy that they thought fit all of the check boxes. And Allen was a guy that they were like, well, he checks all of our boxes. We love him and all this. So, if there's a guy that fits that somewhere at a position of need, I could certainly see it. But I really feel like they're at a great spot to go get, a veteran safety or corner that can really play and really be a good man coverage, tone setter. Doesn't have to be amazing. Just has to be a bulldog who you can pay and that guys will respect. That's all you need, I think, right now. That's what they're missing.
Do you think they're more willing to roll the dice? Like at home specifically, if he was picking between corner and safety, which is the one he prioritizes as a spot that he needs to make a big splash this offseason?
To spend for free agency or the draft?
Or to use a premium pick.
If he's
setting up the board of we're going to spend our money, does he think safety is one let's just keep Deshaun Elliott and we get Walker back? Yeah. We got Kirby.
I think that corner would be the one. Because I think safety, again, is – I think that it goes into the whole bigger picture of, they really think they can play the board. They got Kirby in the third friggin' round, and he is going to outperform that a son of a bitch. So, they really, I think, trust their eyes, and they're not giving – I don't think they've given up on Melifonwu yet, even though a few people wanted to a few times. But I don't think they've given up on Ify quite yet, and we'll see how that all goes. But I think they trust themselves to play the board and find steals at safety and develop it. But corner is hard to develop.
That is like the ultimate. That's the thing I think Aaron Glenn smashes his brain against the, you know, like, I got to get this into these people's heads. Like, it's hard to develop a corner. Like, it's hard to teach a guy how to be a, like, how to have no memory. It's hard to teach a guy how to, like, just play without fear and to be instinctual. Like, you either have to have it, you either have it or you don't. And, like, that's the kind of, so I think that corner would be the one that they'd be willing to spend the money on. I think corner is the one, if you're going to spend cash or go crazy on something, or go crazier than you would have wanted to, that's the one where you do it. Because I think you trust yourself in every other, and you have the roster too, right? You just bring Elliott back.
Right. You know, well, and I think the way that they want, the way that Glenn wants to play too, right? Like, you need.
Yeah.
You need, like, you've got to have corners. Some corners. You've got to have some corners out there.
And Okuda is not doing it. That's the other thing to bring up here. You mentioned it. And we can close with this, unless we have some questions that popped up there that we haven't touched on or covered.
I can pull one or two here. Yeah, but let's talk about Okuda.
Like, Okuda is the fifth year. It's coming up. And people have asked that, you know, what do you think they're going to do with it? I don't know what they're going to do with it. I don't know what would make sense for them one way or the other. But, I mean, he hasn't done it. He got benched at the end of the year, right? That's what happened. He got benched at the end of the year. He hasn't answered the bell. He had a nice-ish stretch at the beginning of the season, but Jeff Okuda's issues are, I think, what they've been all along. He's too far into his own head. I, again, will say I think he would be a better safety than a corner, and I think that it would really behoove all parties to really, really think long and hard about that before they make any decisions on their fifth-year choices here. But he doesn't fit what Aaron Glenn wants. He hasn't yet. And you know, he just doesn't. He's not a physical go get you in the face guy at the line of scrimmage. He's not a guy who can shake off a tough one and just keep going. He's a good run defender, but it's not always that way. It wasn't always that way this year, which was weird. So I don't know. What you have any thoughts on this? It's been a wild ride for Jeff Okuda. I feel bad for him in a lot of ways because he's still such a young player that got such a horrible start to his career, but he's also kind of not a great fit here. Like, it doesn't feel like he's a great fit at corner within Aaron Glenn's system.
Right. I mean, I think character-wise, he is a great fit.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah.
I don't think you can pick up his fifth-year contract option and pay him whatever it is, $12 million. Especially because that one comes with injury guarantees. Right. And
he's already had,
you know. So several, I don't know that you can do that. I mean, we did have someone did ask if corner is a position where you would consider them doubling up in the first or the early rounds and taking one at 6 and 18 or taking one at 18 and 49. And
Yes.
I would consider that on the table. It'd be hard to take two corner rookies and plug them both in as
right away
your starters next year. Like, you'd have to, I think Jerry Jacobs probably would come back as your starter on the outside. But I do think it's a possibility that they do that because, I mean, they need at least two, maybe three. Probably need a slot guy. Like, you need, they need a backup. You need right. Corners. So how do you do that? I think that's not coming just through free agency or just through the draft. I think you got to go both. So
that's they need to spend money on a real corner, a real press corner that can tackle and do all the things. And whatever they got to do there, that's what you got to do. I think you got to draft one early. And like you said, I think you have to consider whoever that question asked. I maybe not at 6 and 18. If you take one at 6, that means you love the guy. Maybe you don't do that. I don't know, but it's possible. It'll be there. That's not impossible, right? I don't think that's impossible. I wouldn't do it, but like, I don't want to call that an impossibility because the board is going to play that way. If you take a corner at 6, you're still going to have, I mean, my God, there's people that think Ringo is a second round corner now. So, I mean, shit, if I got Keely Ringo at like 50, I'd be like clicking my heels. Like, let's go. Yes, I absolutely think that that's possible on the table. I don't know if I would predict it, but I certainly think I wouldn't rule it out for the Lions here going forward.
And we've seen him double. I mean, we've seen him.
Yeah. Back to back with Levi or, and Elaine.
Mm-hmm. At least consider doubling up. So, yeah, I think it's possible.
Very interesting.
I did have a couple little questions here. I just want, this isn't even so much a question, but someone asked just sort of what the fallout of, I can't find the question now, but I definitely remember seeing it. So the Cardinals are reportedly hiring away Dave Sears, who is the Lions director of college scouting.
I saw that.
And was with the previous regime and then stayed on. And so that's potentially significant. I mean, that is Holmes obviously trusted him enough to keep him. He gave him a bunch of credit for the James Houston pick.
Right.
And that's another spot where I think they have some stuff built in-house where they can move guys around. Brian Hudspeth, the assistant director of college scouting, they've got some young scouts that they really like in there. Eloy Ledesma is one of them. Like Patrick Malarkey. There's a bunch of young scouts in there that I think they would like to keep around. But that's something, as we talk about changes, that now you're starting to get guys poached from your scouting staff, too, because you're doing a good job. So when we talk about how things are different,
well, and the other thing, too, look, this is going to be a place where if I'm a good young scout, I want to come work with Brad Holmes, maybe kind of, don't you think? If I'm a good young personnel person, I want to come work with him. And if I'm a good young coach, I want to come work with Dan. Like, that's, you hit that on the head. Like, Holmes kept a guy from Bob Quinn's scouting staff, trusted his own instinct on that guy enough to keep him in. And now he's turned into whatever he's going to be here in Arizona. And Ben Johnson, the guy that we just talked about, is a guy that Campbell kept off Patricia's staff. Matt Patricia, the future Alabama offensive line coach or whatever he's about to be. Oh, my God. A lot has changed, ladies and gentlemen. But in any event, you got any more there?
I just wanted to mention that because I thought it was a good question. Yeah, and then here, I'll let you close on this one because I have no – I see you got – is it WrestleMania 3? Is that the shirt that's on there?
Yeah. I got the
– somebody asked for your Royal Rumble, predictions. So I can't let you
– I don't know. I'm more of an AEW guy these days, but I will be watching the Rumble. It's on Saturday. I didn't realize this year. Usually it used to be – I think they moved it. It used to be that Sunday in between the Super Bowl. Is that gone? The in-between game week? Is that gone now? That, like, week off?
No, I think it's still there because that's when the, like,
Pro Bowl or whatever, right?
Like,
anyway, they used to do it then. Whatever
the football game is.
Yeah, they used to do it then and it was just perfect, but now it's on that Saturday, so whatever. I have no idea. I don't watch enough of it, but I do think the buzz is that Cody Rhodes will be returning. So I guess we'll see. Cody, big fan of his. I've always liked Cody Rhodes. Broke my heart when he left AEW, of course. But I don't know, Chris. You probably don't watch any wrestling, but you probably saw on Twitter. Do you remember on Twitter the pictures of Cody with the big, like, he had a big shoulder injury. It was all black and blue and disgusting and everything. But he might
I do remember that. That's the extent of my knowledge about what's happening.
So he may be returning. I think that's the buzz and the dirt sheets. I don't know. I'm very disconnected. I've been too much... The draft is taking up too much of my wrestling time right now, so I don't know what's going on. But I will be watching the Rumble. I'm looking forward to it. But
I don't think I've been plugged in since, like...
98?
Yeah, I was going to say, since, like, I stopped playing, like, the Nintendo WrestleMania game in, like, the early 90s. So.
It's definitely unique. It's a unique form of entertainment, we'll say that. But in any event, I think that'll do it for this week. Thanks to Chris for sitting in. I believe Colton will be back next week. Thanks everyone for listening. Be sure to subscribe to The Athletic and our show. Chris, you got anything else? We're good to go.
No, have fun at the Senior Bowl.
All right.
It's my first time I'm not going down in a little while.
That's a good point. Well, actually, I think I will be live from the Senior Bowl next week with Colton. And we will maybe we'll talk some Senior Bowl stuff. I think we'll probably have to, right? Because that'll be talk of the town. But in any event, thanks for listening this week. Take care of each other and we'll talk to you again soon.